The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Europe podcast, available every morning on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It's Wednesday, the 10th of April in London. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Coming up today, markets wait to see if the US inflation print delivers the Goldilocks data the Federal Reserve is looking for.
A major ratings agency goes negative on its outlook for China's long-term foreign debt pile.
Plus, making ends meet, the UK's financial regulator warns more than 7 million people are struggling to pay their bills.
Let's start with a roundup of our top stories.
The March inflation report from the United States, due out later, is unlikely to settle the debate around when the Federal Reserve will cut US interest rates. Economists surveyed by Bloomberg are expecting a slowdown in the pace of price increases, with the core reading, excluding food and energy, expected to rise by 0.3% between February and March. Investors are now evenly split on the prospects of a first Fed cut in June, with many traders unwinding dovish bets on significant cuts for this year. But Bloomberg Opinion's Mohamed El Arian expects the central bank's overall trajectory to remain unchanged.
I think Chair Powell has made it very clear that he's willing to look through these bumps. They will need overwhelming evidence that it is more than a bump in order for them to change their views. Inflation will be sticky. Inflation will be absolutely sticky. We're going to get stuck at around 2.5% to 3%. And I do think that that actually warrants, over the long term, the Fed rethinking its inflation target.
Mohamed El Arian. He also told Bloomberg that he expects only two rate cuts this year from the Fed. His comments come as the Bank of Atlanta Fed President Rafael Bostic reiterated his expectation for only one rate cut in 2024.
Fitch has cut its outlook for China's long-term foreign debt from stable to negative. The ratings agency says rising economic uncertainties have eroded fiscal buffers. Although Fitch sees government debt increasing in coming years, it affirmed China's A-plus rating.
Joe Biden says that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's approach to the war is a mistake. The US president spoke to Univision in an interview taped last week when an airstrike killed seven aid workers. He says that Netanyahu should be calling a ceasefire.
I think what he's doing is a mistake. I don't agree with his approach. I think it's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out on a highway where it wasn't like it was along the shore. It wasn't like there was a convoy moving here, et cetera. So what I'm calling for is for the Israelis to just call for a ceasefire.
Biden's comments come after months of rising international concerns over the death toll in Gaza that have increasingly isolated Israel on the world stage. Turkey yesterday announced fresh restrictions on exports to Israel, further straining already tense relations between the one-time military allies.
Millions in the UK are struggling to make ends meet. That's according to a new survey of British adults, many of whom are falling behind on household bills or credit commitments. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts has the details.
Some 7.5 million people in the UK are struggling to pay their bills. That's a big drop from the almost 11 million who were in the same position at the start of last year. But it's still higher than the number before the cost of living spiralled after the pandemic. The estimates come from a survey by the Financial Conduct Authority, who says that more than 2.5 million adults are relying on debt advisors and charities for help. The regulator is making permanent a COVID-era requirement for lenders to do more to support borrowers in difficulty. Its efforts are sure to be put to the test as inflation and higher interest rates continue to squeeze households. In London, Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Radio.
Now, the UK's biggest supermarket chain, Tesco, says that retail profit will likely rise this year as easing cost pressures allow for some price cuts. The British grocery giant says that it expects to generate at least £2.8 billion of retail adjusted operating profit in the current fiscal year. That's slightly up on what it reported last year. Tesco also announced plans to buy back £1 billion of shares over the next 12 months.
The crisis at Thames Water is prompting fears about other UK utilities. The risk premium on newly issued bonds in the water sector has widened by as much as 13 basis points. James Wilcock has more.
Thames Water is special. It's the largest and most indebted of all water companies in Britain. Its owner Kemble's default rating was downgraded to CC yesterday by Fitch, and it emerged Britain's Environment Secretary rejected a direct appeal for intervention from shareholders. But a lot of UK water companies have high levels of debt, inflation-linked bonds, and poor operating performance. That's got some fixed income traders wondering if Thames is the large, messy canary in the coal mine or sewer. In London, James Walcock, Bloomberg Radio.
And finally, Meta is downplaying the threat posed by this year's bumper elections by disinformation created by artificial intelligence. The company is under pressure to ensure that AI-generated social media content doesn't interfere with voting. Meta's head of global affairs, Nick Clegg, says that they haven't seen that yet on their services. The social media giant announced plans last week to label all AI-generated content on Facebook. Now, in a moment, we're going to get more details on the US inflation numbers that come out today, plus on the UK, the FCA reporting around the pressures that households in Britain are still facing with bills. We'll talk about that too. But first, this Court RI, perhaps wishful thinking maybe, a four-day work week. Apparently, it's still decades away in the United States. Our colleague Alison Schrager has been writing about this, drawing a lot from the example of France, which brought in 1998 a reduced working week, but saying that actually it would add enormously to the costs to US businesses and therefore to the US economy. So she was sort of advocating perhaps to think twice on this measure.
Yeah, certainly this is in the context of Bernie Sanders proposing legislation that would set a work week to 32 hours. Now, the hope with France's 35-hour working week is that it would create employment essentially because everyone would work less. That hasn't really worked out. And actually the average working week in France is above 35 hours and pretty comparable to other OECD countries as well. Essentially, for people who get paid by the hour, it means that your overtime kicks in at a lower level, although many companies are reluctant to pay that overtime. And for those that don't work or aren't paid by the hour, it means that people get a couple of extra days leave a year to compensate for the fact that they work over the 35 hours. But it doesn't mean that people are sitting there, you know, clock watching and in a completely different way that you might see in other capitals around Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. Read it on the Bloomberg Terminal this morning, the idea of that four-day work week still being many decades away, although things have trended lower in terms of working hours, but fairly slowly. That got our attention this morning in terms of what we're thinking about. Let's move on, though, and think also about the March US CPI report, likely to show the hot readings of the last couple of months maybe are an exception. Bloomberg Economics expects both the headline and core CPI number to slow to 0.3% month on month. Let's discuss with Bloomberg's Europe FX Rates and Rates editor, Aline Oyamada, who is here with us in the radio studio. What do we expect then from the CPI data? What are we watching for?
So the big thing to watch for in the CPI today is whether it will confirm the Fed's message that the past reports were just a bump, like you said, or because the market has been a bit doubtful about that. So the overall, the headline number may still tick higher, but the core, which is less volatile and something that people really look into, is expected to decelerate further to the lowest level since 2021. So that would confirm that prices are really cooling down.
There's been a lot of anticipation and positioning ahead of this data point as well, and bond traders particularly placing an interest on short-term interest rate futures bets.
Yeah, that's right. The market is super bearish on treasuries recently. You're seeing shorts piling up, and that's all tied to the expectations for the Fed. We had a big hawkish repricing toward less rate cuts. So this figure will be important to tilt the balance either to more or less rate cuts. We are at the moment where the market is hanging in the balance between 2 and 3. So that will be important to determine.
I mean, your focus is on Europe. What do you make then of the divergence between the Fed and the ECB, which of course has got a rate decision, and there's pressure potentially on the currency as well, on the euro?
Yeah, so the expectation is the Fed will cut rates less than the European Central Bank. When you look at inflation in Europe, the downward trend is more clear. So that's what's behind those expectations of more rate cuts here in Europe. That won't be good for the euro, of course. The rate differential will just turn in less in favor of the euro. And we are seeing some pretty bearish comments recently, some people bringing up the parity talk. We are still like 8% away of that. But when people start to consider it as a scenario, it definitely brings some tension to the market.
Does, you know, look, we've got tomorrow's ECB meeting as well. And I wonder when we put these two pieces of information together, are we going to look at a significantly different dynamic potentially on interest rate bets by the end of this week?
It could be, yes, especially because the ECB may kind of prepare the market for a June rate cut. That's what they have been kind of doing without specifically putting a date to it, obviously. But they've been guiding the market toward a June rate cut. And if we get a hotter CPI print from the US, then that divergence will definitely arise this week.
Mm. Where do you think that leaves the Bank of England? We were speaking to Catherine Nice just earlier this morning. She's at PGIM, but she was and she held a number of significant roles at the Bank of England. Got the Ben Bernanke review that comes out on Friday. I mean, I suppose if we're thinking about the US CPI and the ECB, we should include a word on the Bank of England.
Yeah, the Bank of England is a very interesting story because at the beginning of the year, it was expected to be the most hawkish one because inflation here is higher. There were some more pressures from the wages side. But now we are actually seeing more people getting on the view that the BOE may cut as much as the Fed or even more. Mm. It's currently expected to cut in August by market expectations and a fully cut from the Fed is only fully priced by September, so it may come earlier, in fact. I think it's one that there's a lot of doubt still, so we'll have to see the next labor data, the next inflation data to firm those expectations. But it is the case, right? That's right, that maybe they will cut more than the Fed.
Keeping things interesting in markets anyway. Aline Oyemada, thank you very much for joining us. Bloomberg's Europe FX and Rates Editor there.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Now, let's turn our attention then to a new report out this morning from the Financial Conduct Authority. More than 7 million people in the UK are struggling to pay their bills, according to a survey of almost 3,500 UK adults at the start of this year. Comes as the regulator in Britain was given added responsibility last year to protect UK borrowers. Joining us to discuss is Bloomberg's EMEA Head of Finance and Investing, Tom Metcalfe. Great to have you with us. The cost of living crisis is still very much with us, but it's the angle around the FCA that really fascinates me about this. I mean, what can the FCA do about it? It's sort of tracking how people are faring economically.
Yeah, well, it's sort of linked to these new responsibilities you mentioned. So there's a consumer duty, and they're also effectively over the course of the next few months introducing more and more protections for borrowers. So I think it's a fair point. How much can regulators actually alleviate the cost of living crisis? What they say is, hey, we can make sure if someone's struggling to pay the bills, you know, that the banks are treating them fairly. They're not going straight to say, you know, kind of booting people out of their own homes and stuff. But yeah, no, this survey for me is, as I look at it, I remember it coming out last year, and this was, you know, where there's something like 10 million people struggling to face bills. So obviously that's an improvement. But as you look at the sort of the raw numbers, 7.4 million, that's, you know, comfortably above about the 5 million or so it was in the pandemic. So my take from this is, you know, those cost of living pressures are easing, but they're still very much there. And, you know, I think the sort of reality on the ground, as this survey is showing, is still very tough for a lot of people.
It's interesting, though, because what we've heard from banks in recent reporting seasons as well hasn't been a massive uptick in non-performing loans either. And is that sort of the next thing that we need to be watching as we're heading into another earnings season?
Yeah, absolutely. For the British banks, that's all we look for. And it's been interesting, as you say, over the last few quarters, it's always been a very kind of, despite maybe the broader macro picture being pretty grim, every single bank is saying, no, we're not seeing in our own book the arrears. So whether they are sort of, there's more stress popping up in parts of the system that are maybe less transparent, or the fact that, you know, you've had this huge sort of subsidies going out over the COVID period, and you know, as they continue to sort of work their way out of the system, you might maybe see a bit more stress.
Yeah, I mean, well, we have seen an enormous surge in buy now, pay later firms in the UK and across Europe, has to be said, and also in the UK, quite some pressure around financing for car loans in Britain. That is another factor that we've talked about in terms of the banks, some more exposed than others to that. So I suppose perhaps, as you say, some parts of the markets maybe under more sort of may show that pressure more of the consumer.
Yeah, we're always looking for sort of, I guess, the canary in the coal mine, right? Mm. And car finance was a classic, and that's one of the questions we always ask, you know, banks in particular, is like, you know, what is the credit card data showing? And as you say, it does pop up. You can see this, you know, you can see it's not a great time to be a consumer, you know, stuff like the buy now, pay later. And you know, you're seeing a lot of discretionary spend, you know, maybe on the higher ticket items fall away. But saying that, you know, I was looking at Tesco earnings today. Yes. And they're, you know, striking a more positive tone. So, you know, it's amazing to think, but perhaps if, say, there is no sort of sharp shock ahead, you know, it does look like at least sort of, you know, in terms of a really horrible sort of falling out here is maybe being avoided, you know, so, which would be an impressive positive result.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, your morning brief on the stories making news from London to Wall Street and beyond.
Look for us on your podcast feed every morning on Apple, Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each morning on London DAB Radio, the Bloomberg Business app and Bloomberg.com.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Join us again tomorrow morning for all the news you need to start your day, right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.